where this argument is happening, this whole cultural subset of birthers, we are talking about, we respect autonomy of women. We want autonomy for women. We want that, that respect of this sacred event. We are all on the same page here around those core values. We have some core values of
centering women and
of putting them at the center of that experience, of giving them autonomy, making sure that they retain their own autonomy, that they are empowered to birth as designed, right? Like, we have these core, that's why we're even in conversation about it together, is because there's some core similarities. And those core similarities in this fight, we are degrading again, like we are coming against and hurting the very thing we say we believe and why we're in conversation to begin with. We're hurting each other.
Holy Wild Birth is a podcast embracing the reclamation of giving birth, rooted in God's original design, undisturbed.
Here, we share homebirth stories highlighting God's presence as the great midwife, as well as conversations about all aspects of a holistic, spirit-led childbearing year. From the perspectives of myself, traditional midwife Lauren Hall of Rooted in Eden Private Contract Association,
and me, holistic doula and birth keeper Brooke Collier of Sister Birth.
To choose a holy wild birth journey is to consecrate all your decisions unto the Lord.
And to reclaim creation, unadulterated by centuries of human attempts to control and improve upon what God has already called good.
Please remember, birth is not a medical event, but a natural process. We are not your care providers, and this should not be taken as medical advice.
Hi, friend.
Hey.
Back in the studio.
Yes, excited to drop another podcast. Definitely such an intriguing, interesting conversation, but definitely controversial one. And it seems like when we started having this conversation, as soon as, really, we've been having this conversation for months in the Believing Birth Keeper circle. And then here recently, it has really exploded in the controversy and the turmoil over, what does this word mean? What does that word mean? What are you actually saying? And the division, the divisiveness and foulness that has been thrown around.
And almost like pick your camp kind of stuff. Like,
what
camp are you in?
Like, very much trying to decide like where people fit, you know, and it has felt icky. And yet we also felt like we do need to have this conversation. It's not a conversation that we can just ignore. So what do we want to say? Right. Like how do we define these words? Because frankly, words are important. And as we were preparing for this, we had some scriptures that jumped out at us, around that. I think the one that's really the most well-known kind of refrigerator verse, you know, when I think of how powerful our words are, words have power. And I mean, I say it to my kids all the time too, life and death are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit, right? Like this there's another verse talks about it being the rudder, right? Like it steers us. And so that is why I think this is important. You found a verse that really, I think, resonated so deeply with this particular conversation as well. So if you want to share that one.
Proverbs 15:2. The tongue of the wise commends knowledge, but the mouth of fools pour out folly. And I think as we've been witnessing in the natural birth culture and land, there's been a lot of folly around this topic. And we yeah. are hoping, like, I think our intention in recording this podcast is a couple things. One is, even just within our Hearth Mother Journey cohort, needing to have clear, agreed upon knowledge so we all know what the other's talking about. Right. But then also, I hope that we can be like a voice of nuanced wisdom that's gentle and brings peace.
Yeah. Right.
And yeah, allows us to explore these questions thoughtfully without being divisive or trying to draw hard lines in the sand that no one can cross or else they don't belong or whatever else. So
right.
we're hoping to Absolutely. Be a tongue of wisdom that commends knowledge and not a mouth that fools of fools pouring out folly.
Yes, yes. Let that be so. So, and we prayed before that, but that's definitely our prayer that this would be guided by his wisdom and bring some unity. Mm-hmm. So I really loved Isaiah 57:19 because it's about what he says about our words. And he said, he created the fruit of the lips. Peace, peace to him that is far off and to him that is near, saith the Lord, and I will heal him. And so I just wanted that as almost as a benediction of like, he created the fruit of our lips. He says, peace, peace. So let this be peace, peace. The fruit of this podcast be peace, peace. So, all right. When we were preparing for this, we actually kind of did little, I guess, thought experiment. Just like, okay, these are all the words we want to define. Brooke, you take your document and you define it without me, and I'm going to take mine and do it, and I'll define it. And so we really started of like, let's break it down. What does birth mean? What is vaginal birth? What is cesarean birth? What's the kind of obvious, well-known, not debated definitions? And even that brought up some interesting conversations. So let's start there. Mm-hmm. Birth, right? Birth is the emergence of a baby. Or if you're talking about animals, of other young, from the body of its mother, the start of life as a physical separate being. And biblically, it's defined to bear, bring forth, or beget. So we can birth something by bringing forth, when we bring forth this life, this emergence of, and I think that really is, it's the start of life of physical separation, because we are so mom and baby are that dyad. They're interconnected. And when that baby is born, it's not that they just were created, but they were already, I always say, they're already earthside. They're already here. Yeah. They are fully present being, but they are now physically separate on their own, being. Mm-hmm. And that brings about something separate from you. Right. So that is birth. Yeah.
Very basic.
Very basic.
We also went so basic as to define vaginal birth and cesarean birth. And this is also both very basic, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on it. But strictly speaking, a vaginal birth is the emergence of that baby from the body of its mother through a vagina, through the birth canal. So it's about like the passageway of the birth involved. Yes. In the birth.
Right.
As a cesarean, so, right? Cesarean is about a different passageway to birth.
Yeah. So,
which
yeah,
is a cut made by incision in the womb, just usually out of necessity, although not always.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes called a belly birth or surgical birth. And I did want to, we almost didn't include these pieces, but we had an interesting conversation around this cesarean birth part, because I said, some people I've heard be really unkind to women who've experienced that, whether it was by choice or by circumstance, to say that they didn't birth their child. And I've heard even women, you brought up that point of feeling like they were robbed, of the trauma of like, I was robbed of being able to give birth, and they did give birth. That baby is now a physical separate being from their body. But it wasn't, and the women who are carrying that trauma, it wasn't necessarily, it wasn't their plan, right? It wasn't and it's not the design. We weren't designed to have our abdomen cut open and our, abs separated and then our uterus cut into. It's a very traumatic, intense surgery. It's a very intensive surgery. And so, but it is still a birth. That baby is still emerging from that mother, and that mother still did all the work of bringing forth that baby. And dare I say even more work, because now she has so much more to heal from. So I do want to just say, like, it is a birth. It's still a birth. Just as much as I brought it up, my first marriage was still a marriage, even though it was not, there was not a covenant marriage there. It was abusive, and there was adultery, and there was lies, and there was drugs, and there was abuse, and there was all of the things that totally destroyed everything that God said a marriage was to be. But you can't tell me I wasn't married. I was absolutely married to that man. And I put in all the effort that I could to make it the design that I knew God had made for marriage. But it's still not what ended up being what I experienced. Right. So, I felt like that was a really good parallel of
perfect parallel
design versus experience and how that nuance can come in.
Yeah, I love that. It's so helpful. And then the last definition that we just kind of wanted to briefly hit on is natural birth. And this is one that I think gets a little confused. It tends to be used as a synonym with vaginal birth. Mm-hmm. I've noticed, like, women will say, I went to the hospital and I was induced, but I had a natural birth. And I think in that case, they're usually meaning my baby came out through my vagina. but like the way we would define natural birth would be slightly different than that, in that it would be a birth without the aid of man-made interventions, pharmaceuticals, and procedures and surgeries. So yes, the baby comes out through your vagina and without like pharmaceutical drugs and all these other things layered on top of that.
Right. Just like the birth unfolded. Without the being the forceful, you know, causing of the birth, basically.
Yes, there you go. Yeah, the forceful causing. Yeah. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know why that didn't come when we were writing these, but that
right. Well, you know, things always come out of our mouths on these episodes that we don't see coming. Right. That's good.
So,
shall we move on to the birth locations? So this is another thing. And again, this is pretty straightforward. We're just starting from the very basics here, but then we have to talk about the definitions of different location types of birth. So hospital birth, probably obvious, a labor and birth that is planned to occur at and does occur in a hospital, whether attended by an OB, a CNM, or any other person who has hospital privileges, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's in the hospital.
It's in the hospital. Pretty basic. And then the birth center birth is a, you know, pretty much the same as above, right? It's just the only definition here is the location. We're focusing on the location in these definitions. So birth center birth is the labor and birth that happens in a freestanding or hospital adjacent building staffed by, you know, whether it be direct entry midwives or nurse midwives. That's the, you know, it's a birth that happened in a birth center.
Yeah. And this is sort of a side tangent, but I also want to say it because the word birth center can usually means one or two categories. Even within that, I would say it like branches off into, like Lauren already mentioned, there's a freestanding birth center versus a hospital adjacent one. So sometimes hospitals own birth centers, like it's actually part of the hospital system, but it's right next to it. But it's specifically designed so that the ease of movement between the hospital proper and this birth center is very like fluid and it's interconnected and the medical staff from the hospital can be in the birth center. So that's one kind of birth center. And then the other would be like, in Michigan, at least, and this is probably true elsewhere too, there's like CPMs who own independent buildings like houses that they turn into or strip mall things that they turn into a place to go have your baby. And they're the ones who run that. And it has nothing to do with the hospital at all in any official capacity. There's no connection there financially or politically or staff wise or anything.
Right.
And which birth center you do. Yes. Yeah. That would be another term for that. So Yeah.
So
okay.
They definitely, and I would say that oftentimes, again, dependent on the state, dependent on the midwife regulations, all of that, typically you're going to see licensed midwives running the birth centers or birth houses. There's a lot more regulations on birth centers, freestanding birth centers, that tend to even have harsher policies than hospitals, but that's a whole rabbit hole you should go down on your own time. If that's something you're looking at, what your state and your midwife, are required in order to have a birth center.
Yeah. That might be another episode someday. Who knows?
Right. but then moving on, you know, there's the home birth. So this is a labor and birth is planned to and does occur in one's own home. And more rarely, sometimes it's the home of some other party. I've seen also like hotel births or Airbnb births, or, you know, obviously the parents' friends, the midwife's home that wasn't like a planned, like she doesn't do it for all her clients, but in that particular situation. So it's not necessarily a birth house, but just a home that is being offered up for that particular birth.
Yeah.
So
lastly, an out of hospital birth would encompass both birth centers and homes and Airbnbs and anywhere other than the hospital is called an out of hospital birth.
I think you'll see this most of the time if you're used in like research papers and regulation literature. And I think it's important to just kind of know that that's what they're talking about. I think sometimes people will read that in like, say, a research paper, and the way the headlines are being used, they're trying to say it's about home birth, but it's actually including the larger picture of freestanding as well as hospital adjacent, as well as birth houses, as well as planned home births. And so like it's a big capture of a lot of data that probably shouldn't be being intermingled, especially if they're intermingling it and then saying, well, this is true of home births, when that's not actually divided in the research paper. But oftentimes you have to read like the full paper to understand that. Mm-hmm. So if you see out of hospital, in either research or in regulation in the literature, quote unquote, they are talking about all of those things and it's being captured.
The lacks, the nuance for sure.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Cause there is a lot of nuance there.
There's a lot of nuance, a lot of different types of populations you're talking about, a lot of different protocols that are used in some of those scenarios and not in the others. And
types of attendants and what their training is and their philosophies and who their oversight is and all the things.
I've seen out of hospital research talking about or like preterm babies being born precipitously, being grafted into the same research that was talking about home births, making it look like a whole different, as if it was a planned home birth versus a precipitous preterm baby. Like that's a totally different subset of like stats and outcomes and all of that that were being not separated and then used to try and make it look like home birth was dangerous. Just a little tidbit there for you to be thinking about when you're reading media of any kind, how that is actually being used, even if they're saying it's about home birth. Look for that out of hospital term.
Good word. It's important.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So now we want to get into this is where the controversies have been raging, is defining types of birth, like the kind of labels that we tend to put on people's birth experiences, either before the fact or after the fact. And there's so many terms floating around out there these days. And I just want to preface it by saying, I think a lot of the terms that are floating around out there are coming out of a desire to differentiate and to explore the nuance and to avoid lumping together things that are in their very nature actually rather different than one another. So when having a natural home birth, is too big of an umbrella term, and people want to get more specific about what exactly do you mean by that? Like, what actually happened at your birth? This is where all these other terms kind of emerge to tease out those differences. I think that's the heart behind it. And then, like, culturally, what we're doing right now is wrestling and grappling as a culture over how we use words to describe and label our experiences and to set goals for our experiences even.
Right. Yep. And to be able to just go, this is what I experienced. And frankly, when you experience a, you know, this beautiful, I think that's where I'm seeing the, when we start talking about, was it a free birth or a autonomous birth or a sovereign birth or, you know, they're most of the ones that are really holding tight to their definition, whatever it might be, what they're trying to do is say, I had this amazing experience and I want to share it with you and get, I have these words and these are the words that I have to tell you how amazing this was, to tell you, I have to share my testimony. I have to share my experience. And it was this, you know, it was, and then when people don't understand what they're trying to say and it starts to become a fight about it, it begins to degrade what they experienced. And then they obviously become very defensive because you're degrading something that was important to them. And they were using the words that came to them on how they could define what they experienced. And truly, really only they can define. but I think when they start doing that and it's, they're holding a different definition than someone else who had the same, you know, or a different way, but they held it differently, but their experience was different in the physical of like how it happened. They had a free birth without a medical provider and they had a free birth with a medical provider is the controversy, for instance. And they're trying to say, well, you using that term is degrading my experience, or you not letting me use that term is degrading my experience. And so then we have this, like, this cat fight over it when really, like, that's all that's happening. They're trying to say, this was my experience and it's important to me. And these are the words that I'm using. And these words are important to me because it's deeply connected to this intimate, amazing experience that I want to have words to express to you because you weren't there and you weren't my body. And I need, I need to tell my story. And so I think that's why this is so important. And why it's so nuanced.
We have to be gentle and we have to be curious. Whenever you hear somebody using one of these words we're going to talk about to describe their birth or their plan for their birth, start with gentle curiosity. Oh, so interesting. I wonder what you mean by that. Like, when you say that word, that title, what does that mean to you? Ask them to flesh out what they're actually talking about beyond just the title. And that can keep us from these traps of getting dogmatic or judgmental about what words they are and are not allowed to use. Just so gentle curiosity.
You know, and I think that's exactly, I mean, what a powerful tool, gentle curiosity to use, because truly, I think if you step back and remove yourself from the argument of what do I believe that word means, most of the women in the birth, the natural birth, the free birth, the undisturbed birth, the whatever birth you want to, you know, like this fringe birth community that we all find ourselves in. If you're listening to this podcast, you are most likely in this cultural subset.
You're fringy.
You're fringe. Congratulations. All of the where this argument is happening, this whole cultural subset of birthers, we are talking about, we respect autonomy of women. We want autonomy for women. We want that that respect of this sacred event. We are all on the same page here around those core values. We have some core values of
centering women and
of putting them at the center of that experience, of giving them autonomy, making sure that they retain their own autonomy, that they are empowered to birth as designed, right? Like, we have these core that's why we're even in conversation about it together, is because there's some core similarities. And those core similarities in this fight, we are degrading again, like we are coming against and hurting the very thing we say we believe and why we're in conversation to begin with. We're hurting each other instead of like going, okay, I can be curious and hear that you mean this differently. And is that okay? Can we be in unity while we disagree? And I think that we can. I do think that you don't have to be in complete agreement to be in unity, yes, to live in peace with people. That is a core belief of mine in my life, because frankly, if we can't be in unity and we can't live in peace with someone who we disagree with, then really we don't love people. We love ourselves. We love our view. We love our perspective. We love what we have to say. And so if we can't show that kind of unity and peace, that's really what we're saying, is that we don't love other people, which is harsh, but if that's not true of you, if you love other people, then let that be a conviction to say, oh, wow, that's not the message I want to live my life in. So let me walk in the love that I actually want, you know, like let that move you to righteousness, not condemnation.
That's good. And even as we talk through these definitions, you might notice some nuance in me and Lauren's understanding of some of the words. Like as we were working on these definitions together, we're like, oh, there's a slightly different aspect there, a little pushback. Mm-hmm. And it's healthy, guys. It's not a problem. Yes. It's healthy. Yes,
it is. All right. So let's dive into the actual words now that we've got all of our precursors out of the way.
Okay. Sounds good. Kick it out for us.
Okay. So where are we starting here? We've got... I think we started with midwife attended birth, is just simply, a midwife that has been hired to be present. So someone who identifies as a midwife, whether they are licensed, unlicensed, or all of the litany of various for a future podcast type of birth worker, they identify as a midwife, and they were present at the birth. And I kind of put this as a versus, a wise woman supported, being someone that's a more holistic ancient view of birth, that's in attendance of the birth. So you might have, again, more of that like an authentic midwife or the traditional midwife or but even a CPM that, you know, she happens to have gone down that pathway, but she really carries within her a holistic ancient view of birth. And she is a wise woman. She's just a wise woman. And she's bringing that wisdom with her. And she's in attendance. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's more of a quality of the attendance being than it is like a credential, I would say, right?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
And so I think that quality of being can show up in variously differently certified and credentialed people.
For sure.
Yeah.
So then we get to one of the kind of more debated, maybe a little less debated, but a debated unassisted birth. What does that mean? So I guess I would love to hear your definition, and then we had a little bit of difference in how we defined this one.
Yeah. So I'll just read mine and Lauren will read hers and then we'll discuss. But there. So I had written a labor and birth at which, by choice, no other hired and trained birth expert is present with intention of equipping to assist the woman in her birthing process beyond offering emotional, spiritual, and practical support.
Okay. And then I wrote, no witness is present at the birth outside of a spouse or family and friends that are not involved in birth work in any way. And then I actually put in parentheses, I'm actually unsure if it's all birth workers or only has some sort of medical training, like, you know, like maybe a doula could be in an unassisted birth, but if they have some kind of, it's a sister with RN training, or it's a, you know, she's a student midwife and she's present, at the end, you know, like, I'm actually unsure. Well, how does that, but I feel like for me, I say an unassisted birth is someone that doesn't have, you know, really any medical training to fall back onto that they are going to pull out of their bag. You know, that they even,
yeah.
And I think this is where the nuance comes in when we started having the discussion of like, okay, what's the difference here? I think it really comes down to like, we're trying to define human nature of the intention of the person that's attending. Like Brooke attends a lot of unassisted births, even though she has a lot of knowledge around birth and physiological birth. And she's gotten some, you know, training to be a midwife. And she's been to many, many births as a birth photographer, as a doula, as a birth kit, you know, like she has birth experience. But you were really intentional about entering that space and leaving all of your experience like you would any other baggage, and you just put it at the door and you leave mm-hmm. that there.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is what you have those conversations with her. You're saying you want an unassisted birth, but you want my presence there. You want me to take pictures, you want whatever. And so you go in to take just what you were asked to do. And you are very yes. intentional about staying in your lane. But mm-hmm. not all people are. Not
and
all
if
people
the woman
can
yeah, it's true.
Stay in their lane.
Yep.
And then, yeah. And then the woman. What were you going to say about that?
Just like, I feel like it's my job if I'm attending a birth that the woman has expressed she desires to have it be unassisted or free, that I am going to put my stuff down and also keep pointing her back to herself as her mm-hmm. own, her own care provider, her own midwife, like to keep recentering her. It's like, you said you wanted yeah. to hold that. I'm not going to take that from you. That's for you to hold. Right. And that's for you to carry, because you, this is what you told me that you wanted. And of course we can revisit that if she wants to, but you know, so
yeah,
that's where it gets tricky, because like,
yeah,
I do think it has something to do with the intention of the people who are present and what they mm-hmm. have in their bag and whether or not they're yeah. going to use what's in their bag. And
right.
I mean, it's also true that I can't forget everything I know just because right. I'm attending an unassisted birth. Like,
right.
I can't unbecome a midwife in the making.
Right.
But I can choose as much as I'm able and my conscious ability to hold that back and to sit on that and to put that in the corner as much as I can.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think it also brings up the internal state of the mom, mm-hmm. of what is she the type of person who is full, that has made personal responsibility and autonomy, that internal work, like we had talked mm-hmm. about in one of our first podcasts, the personal responsibility and
I
autonomy,
love that one.
Right? Like that,
yeah,
that was rich. And we talk about this being an internal place. And I've seen, and I think, well, maybe even this theme seems to be throughout all of the rest of the definitions, that we hit, is like, this is about that internal intention. Is that that autonomy she's seeking, has it truly made it in an eternal choice, or is it something she can only access if there is no other person mm-hmm. that she can deem as authority? Like, can she pick up personal responsibility even with other quote unquote authorities in the room? Is she still the main authority, or is she going to default to someone else's authority because she deems them more knowledgeable about right. her than she is of herself? Mm-hmm. And so that is, again, it's trying to define human nature and how, well, I wouldn't be able to walk in my personal authority if there was someone who I knew more than me. That's an internal state. That's not an external state. So, mm-hmm. And then we're putting our own perspective on that other person, not knowing whether they were able to do that. And they were able mm-hmm. to continually be their main care provider within that space, even if, you know, someone forgot to leave their stuff at the door. So, mm-hmm. you know, but in general, I think when people use the term unassisted, they are talking about there's not another, you know, a medical provider in the room. I would say
there's not an expert present.
There's not an expert present.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I would say you're a birth expert. So
that's where it gets fuzzy. And yet the women I attend would still say they had free births or unassisted births. Right. And I would agree with them.
Absolutely.
So I don't know. You know, it's fuzzy.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And I think it becomes fuzzy because you attended that birth differently. You know, you're going to attend that birth differently than you would if you were asked to be in a certain role. So there is a black and white line that was different, but it's hard to define that because that's an internal line that you know you made,
right?
And that you know she mm-hmm. made, that no one else could see outside of, because it's a motive of the heart type of thing. And I think that's really, mm-hmm. it's true of all of these. We're talking about the motives of a heart of someone. We're talking about their internal state of being. And then to say you didn't have that, that's why we get so much defense around this.
Right. Like, can we actually, I know this isn't in order on our notes, but I kind of want to jump down to the free birth thing because it does go, it's so adjacent to unassisted birth mm-hmm. and the conversation around it is really similar to me. Mm-hmm. I think, in fact, these are two terms that I actually used to use pretty interchangeably. And I think many people still do. But as Lauren and I were teasing out, like, what is the difference between an unassisted birth and a free birth, if there is one? How do I want to start this? So I had written for my definition, and then I'll again let Lauren do hers.
Yeah.
A free birth is a labor and birth in which the woman has internally assumed full responsibility, authority, and rights, and so moves freely in choosing and directing every aspect and element of her birth, from those who are present down to the sorts of interventions and assistance that are or are not employed. That's a very wordy definition.
Very much. Yeah, and I put, free means not under the control or in the power of another, able to act or be done as one wishes. I believe free birth is a birth in which a mother feels the definition of freedom, that she's feeling
it's
that
an internal definition of
mm-hmm. not under the control or the power of another, able to act or be done as one wishes. And I feel like, honestly, we said the same thing very just differently, but we put that as an internal state.
Which makes it not about location or even who's present, but more so about in what way is that woman moving through that process, and is she mm-hmm. embodying her freedom and exercising it throughout the entire process, and no one's taking that from her, and if they're trying, she's not allowing it, you know, and that's hard work.
That is.
That's really hard work to keep. And again, slippery to have the definition be about something that's invisible. Mm-hmm. It's easier to say a free birth is one that's at home alone.
Yeah.
But I don't, when I really break it down, like that actual definition of freedom is what Lauren said, to be not under the control or the power of another.
Right. And so that comes into this place of, actually, before I go there, so we were wrestling this out and talking about it, and my husband, who's obviously like, he's familiar with birth and natural birth and all of the things, but he's not in this world. He's not like mm-hmm. got a bunch of birthy things on his Instagram feed and Facebook, and he's not having conversations every day, right? Like, he's not in the birth world, even though he's very familiar with, you know, some of these concepts as the husband of a midwife. And so I asked him, hey, Brandon, what would you call a free birth? And he literally just was like, I wish I had written it down what he had said. But he basically said, well, to be free, so she's in control of what is done or not done to her in her birth. Like, she's free to make all of the decisions.
Yeah. She does what she wants to do.
She does what she wants to do because she's free to do that. And I said, okay. So some would say, I truly try not to like feed or, you know, anything, but I was like, some would say that a free birth is actually only, about where she gives birth or, who's in, like, she's not around any midwife or I think maybe before that I said, so could a woman have, if I attended her, could she have a free birth? And he was like, well, yeah. And then I said, okay, well, some people would say that if there was a midwife present or if there was, you know, someone there to help her in any way, or if she was in like the medical system, any of those things, like that's completely like a free birth is only removed out of the medical system and from anybody that's connected to that, like a midwife. And he was like, well, that's weird. I was like, why? And he said, well, is a convict free after they're set out of jail? Like if a police officer enters the room, are they no longer free? They're just there. There's an authority there, but they're not, they were a convict, but they're a free man walking out about in the world. Mm-hmm. They're free. They have their freedom. So the presence of someone else in the room doesn't negate that they are free. And I was like, that's a really simplistic mm-hmm. view of looking at that. And I kind of like yeah. how far removed he was. He was just like looking at the word itself. What does free mean? What does birth mean? Does anybody, he was like, it doesn't affect who is there. They're free. And so I just loved he in a very like masculine, straight to the point way was like, that's an internal state. Like they are, mm-hmm. are they free or are they not? Is she, you know, being her main care provider is really what it comes back down to it mm-hmm. for me. And I think, again, this is why it gets messy, because some women, they're only able to pick up being their main care yeah. provider if there is no other care provider in the room to offer.
Or at least it's much easier to do that.
Right.
Like, yeah. and I can attest to that, having chosen it, that it is easier. Yeah. To yeah. retain that state when there's no one around you who you can even be tempted to offload it to.
Yeah.
Tons easier. Like it's a very different state of being yourself as a mother. Just like if you are in the room with a cop, we all have this, the knee-jerk reaction to the cop, like almost this, like, I'm going to get in trouble, even though like you haven't done anything wrong and that's not why they're there even. Like,
right.
If yeah. you're a recently freed man and a cop walks in the room, you're probably going to have some sort of reaction to that cop. Mm-hmm. Like, here's a funny example. I went to pick up my raw milk from the parking lot of a Catholic church, like I do every week. And while I was standing waiting to get my raw milk from my farmer, a cop car pulled in the parking lot. And as in many states, raw milk here is legally a little ambiguous and gray, and you have to find a loophole. So this cop car pulls in, and I'm like, you know, like, it's almost immediately like, I'm not free to get my raw milk because this cop... And then he walks right up. He just kind of saunters over and he stands next to me. And my farmer just looks at him and goes, oh, hey, here's your milk. And I was like, oh,
he's getting the cop
is actually here to get milk too. The cop has raw milk. And so like your midwife could be at your free birth and you might have this knee-jerk reaction to her. Like she's going to try to overpower or take my autonomy or my authority. You may be tempted to offload it to her because she has that title, but she might really just be there to get raw milk too. She's there to say, have your freedom. I'm with you in that.
I want you to have your freedom. That is my, that's the whole reason I'm in midwifery, you know, like, yes. Yeah. And so it was interesting. I was reading some of the discourse and some of the, and somebody actually put, you know, she was one that kind of sat in the camp of free birth is not, there's no one else present. There's, you know, like you are that unassisted, no one is assisting you. There's no medical training. You're completely out of, you're free from the medical system. And I think that's really what they're saying. You're free mm-hmm. from the medical system. You have been set free from that. And so that she said, the reason she had that, like that definition, she said, I personally would not consider death, how to give my baby breath or how to handle complex medical situations if I had a medical professional at my birth. I'd leave that to them after sharing my preferences. And that stood out to me so much because it was like she was saying, I literally could not remain free in that situation. And so she knew herself well enough to know that if mm-hmm. I want a free birth, I need to be, you know, removed away from anybody that I would offload that responsibility to. I'm not saying that it's wrong. I'm saying that's great for knowing yourself. If that's what you want, that's what you feel called to do. And you know that this person being in your space is going to prevent you from being able to have that free birth. then do that. But also recognize that that's a personal thing for you. That is something that's going on inside of you that the next person might not have the same struggle, and may not even be on that, not even occur to them, because it's become such an internal place of they are their main care provider, that they are their midwife. They are their own midwife, that even when there is another midwife present, they're still their own midwife. And that is really, honestly, when it comes back down to like the first person that used the term free birth that kind of made it popular, that was her definition, was that the woman was her own midwife, and that she recognized herself as the main care provider. And I would say that you could be your main care. I ask that all my clients are their main care provider. I tell them that at the beginning, consults, before we even are working together, I'm asking like, I need you to recognize that you're the main care provider, that I'm not making decisions for you. That's not my role to direct your experience or to tell you how to, like, you are with you more than anyone else. You spend more time with you. Mm-hmm. You are the one that gives yourself the most care or the most lack of care than anyone else. You know, like, you are the one feeding yourself. You are the one caring for yourself. You are the one making sure that you're managing your stress and that your relationships are healthy and that your spiritual life is strong with the Lord. And like all of these, that's your care. And you have to be your main care provider. And that trickles down into so many other things. But I think that's why we get this messiness, because it is this, we're trying to judge what the word means by how we would respond in a certain situation, and not everyone is the same.
I want to add a definition that I don't actually hear people saying very much, but it feels like it would be useful. So we have like the unassisted. So there might be people there, but they're postured not to assist you. And free birth, like, you're operating in freedom. And then like unattended birth, that is the one where you could say there was no one there, literally no one there of any sort.
Yeah.
Who held any kind of knowledge or not. Like, I had an unattended birth. Feels like it would be a useful term to me also.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we should use that one more often if we're like trying to say, like, literally I was by myself. I was unattended. Yeah. You know, because even when you talk about an assisted, someone, like, I feel like I can assist even when I don't assist. Like, your presence assists someone, you know, like being still with someone. That's an assistance that, you know, that you could say happened. And that, I think that's when we start to get like, well, even a doula is assisting someone because their mere presence is being there. And is being like, is helpful, right? But an unattended, when you are literally, there's no witness, there's no attendance, there's no someone attending to any of your needs at all. I think that makes it really, really clear what we're saying.
And I think that that's actually what, like, the most popular probably concept of free birth out there right now would actually be unattended. Like, that's what I would actually call it. Like, I think that's what they're talking about.
That's what, like, they're trying to say. I think that that second definition of free birth, that is about the provider being a provider, being in the room, not in the room, whether that denotes whether it's a free birth or not. I think they're really trying to say, I was unattended and you were attended and I was not attended. And this is what, you know, that's why the feathers are getting ruffled because that is a different experience. That's a completely different experience to be completely unattended in the birth. And I would say that they could all be, you know, like an unattended could still be, it could very much be a free birth. An unattended birth could also very much be a terrified, trauma-filled birth. You know, could be, you know, like, and then especially if we start talking about, like, was it accidentally unattended? Was that, you know, that wasn't the plan and it's precipitous. And then how that plays into her, the characteristic of the experience of that birth.
Right.
Was she fine? It was perfectly great unattended birth. Or was she like still looking for, in that place of being unattended, was she looking for someone to help take some authority over that experience? And she didn't feel free. She didn't feel in control and, mm-hmm. you know, and that, see, again, I'm going back to my bias of the word free, being, you know, being connected to free birth, still maintaining its definition of what free is, what is freedom. Mm-hmm. So if she's unattended,
right. Like I've seen videos of women having unintentional unassisted or unattended births. Like they had it planned to have either a midwife come or to get to the hospital. And for whatever reason, that person isn't available. They'll often have them or EMS on the phone while they're giving birth.
Right.
And then after the baby comes out, they get in an ambulance and go to the hospital. And that shows you, or the midwife still comes over to check in, right? That shows you that that wasn't what they were choosing. And often the aftermath of that is like that they were a little scared, that that didn't feel good to them. That wasn't, that wasn't a free birth. That was a birth that she was trying to have help with and she didn't get it when she wanted it.
Right. Yeah. So that doesn't label, like she doesn't feel like she was free in that situation. She felt like she was very unassisted in a negative way, that she needed, like
thrust into the situation.
In a control of out of control. And free is to, you know, to be in control or in the power of. And so that is, again, there's so much nuance there. But yeah, I think that you have to, you can add that accidental or that, you know, planned or unplanned, unattended, or unassisted.
Yeah. So unassisted and free were like kind of the two like trending like argument terms, but we have others we wanted to hit on briefly too. Yeah. Have you guys heard words like autonomous birth or sovereign birth or undisturbed birth? These are some more that we wanted to kind of touch on. I looked up the actual like Webster's dictionary definitions of each of those words to kind of like take it back to the source, right? So autonomous is the right or condition of self-government. Sovereign birth is possessing supreme or ultimate power. Those two are very similar in my brain, at least. I don't know if you agree, Lauren.
Yeah.
But what would your definitions be?
Having the freedom. I put autonomous birth was having the freedom to govern oneself or control one owns affair. And then sovereign birth is acting or done independently and without outside interference. And again, when you look at a thesaurus for free, you will get, and for autonomous and sovereign, they're all synonyms. So sovereign means free, means autonomous. Autonomous means sovereign, means free. And so I really think that free birth, autonomous birth, sovereign birth, all mean the same thing. Like I have the same definition. I think it's just a slight different connotation of how that word resonates with that person, that they're using that. Maybe some other associations they have to those words and why those words mean something to them. But really, I think, and I do think that autonomous and sovereign in our birth culture tend to have a different, there's more freedom. Interestingly enough, there's more freedom to use those words how you want to use them because they're not as widely used. So there's not any kind of debate on what that word means. And that means this. No, it doesn't. So when you say autonomous or sovereign, it seems to be like there's more wiggle room and more freedom to use it how you mean it. But honestly, you could argue the same things for free birth with autonomous and sovereign. So I've been loving the term sovereign birth lately. You know, and but I have a lot of other mental connections to that word for of various reasons. And then some of myself is like, well, God's sovereign. So like, this is a sovereign birth that he was like, he and I were in conjunction, you know, making the birth decisions under his sovereignty. Like that's just, I love that word. You know, and then you can, I don't know. I think that that becomes personal when you start using synonyms, but I think it's still the same. We're talking about when you use autonomous and sovereign, it's the, that internal state. And I think it's a little bit more, allowable, quote unquote, to use in that, to reference the internal state of the, or the emotion or the feeling of the birth that you had, and how you like, cause that's what it's, you know, that they're trying to express. This is what happened. This is how I felt in this birth. This is the empowerment that was happening there despite what was going on, or because of what was going on. I still was autonomous. I still was sovereign to make those decisions. I was still free in this situation. Or I cultivated a place and I cultivated myself to be free and autonomous and sovereign.
I agree. What about undisturbed birth? This can get gray too, of course, but so I wrote a birth allowed to unfold without manipulation, direction, or oversight, a birth that may be unobtrusively witnessed or occur in complete privacy.
Yeah. And I wrote, whether a person with training was present or not, that person was intentional about allowing the process to unfold with minimal to interference from them. But it's, you know, it's that, like you said, without manipulation, direction, or oversight. I think it is that there was no intentional disruption being placed into her experience. And that she was, you know, she was free to do what she wanted, but, and it was not that. I think when I attend births, I'm really thinking about providing an undisturbed experience. I'm trying not to disturb her, her process, right? Like it's a very intentional, similar to how you would go to an unassisted birth, right? Like it's the same thought process. We're trying not to disturb her process. I mean, to the point that I even have like a protocol in my head of, I don't say or do anything unless I've thought it three times. So, you know, like, does she, I think it's been a long time since she's gone to the bathroom and I've thought it and I'm going to hold that. And then I'm going to wait. And then probably in a couple minutes before I've thought it again, she's going to go up and go to the bathroom. But if I don't, and I recognize she hasn't gone to the bathroom and I've thought it again, you know, like I'm noting that. So like those kinds of things of the, offering her a suggestion, offering her water, encouraging her to follow her body. What, you know, like all of those are disruptions. And they might be helpful disruptions, but they're still disruptions.
Yep.
And so
even observing could be called a disruption.
Absolutely.
Like even just being in the room, observing is a disruption of sorts if they're conscious of your presence. Because we know that birth unfolds differently when it's being observed, even if that observer is silent. So
yeah,
it's like a weighty thing to hold as a birth attendant is knowing that. And and sometimes having the wisdom to remove yourself from the room, or at least from her line of vision.
But so another thing is I always like, am I making sure, am I like staring at her through her contraction, or am I, you know, like observing, but not like watching her like a hawk while also doing my job of being observant. Like it's a a really hard place to balance and takes a lot of intentionality and self-awareness to be able to be in that space.
One more thing about undisturbed birth that I just thought to add is usually when I'm using that term, I'm meaning kind of in reference to the physiological process, like wanting to let the physiological process remain undisturbed, which is this maybe a like nitpicky point, but because it just it's designed to work. What do we got next?
We've got wild birth. Now we've got kind of more of, which I guess wild birth is used
usually about pregnancy. People say wild pregnancy. Yeah,
wild pregnancy. So the wild birth, I put completely outside of the modern medical system. and the care of those with any sort of emergency training totally unassisted. I think I bring this up too, because when I think wild, I think like the wild of nature, like just totally removed from any kind of man-made man interference mm-hmm. whatsoever. So very akin to undisturbed or unattended, mm-hmm. But almost with that, it's almost like in my mind, it's almost like blending the unattended and the sovereign free but internal state of this, just like, I'm going to be in the wild. You know, like I just want to be in mm-hmm. the wild.
yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. I don't have much to add to that one, I guess. That's about and then we, of course, since this podcast is called Holy Wild Birth, we wanted to kind of try to define that too. Like, what do yeah. we, why is this podcast called Holy Wild Birth? And what do we mean by that?
Yeah. And so I would say that even though my definition for wild birth is more of on that unattended, I do think a holy wild birth, has a different connotation to me, in that, you know, well, you can read that definition and all.
Sure. Like the one that we have in our intro.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to first say, before we re-looked up our own intro, it's funny how like we made it and yet like we don't listen to it all the time. So we had to kind of intentionally revisit our yeah. definition from the podcast. But so before we did that, I'd kind of taken the definition of wild and the definition of holy and tried to blend them together and wrote a birth that is allowed to unfold in a way as close to God's original design and creation as possible. Because that's like the wild to me in a sense. It's like the wild. God's yeah. creation before it was disrupted and interrupted and like improved upon, right? So right. and dedicated and consecrated to God as a sacred event or act of worship.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. So then we wrote that Holy Wild Birth is to consecrate all your decisions unto the Lord and reclaim creation unadulterated by centuries of human attempts to control and improve upon what God has called good. It's exploring the choice to give birth according to God's design in creation as a way of honoring him. Our undisturbed births are holy spaces set aside for God to be invited near in unique encounters. We trust him as our midwife in the untamed territory of surrendered birth. As we do so, it becomes anointed. Which we'll get to anointed birth in a second. But that is, I think that really is the essence of almost all of the birth types that we've been talking about here as Christian women mm-hmm. moving forward. We're talking about his design, that freedom to walk in that personal responsibility, walking in autonomy, saying, I want to go back to what he called good, what he mm-hmm. designed. And then I'm also dedicating and consecrating all of this unto him, that no matter how it unfolds, like this is his, he's sovereign over it. It's consecrated. It's set apart. It's something that's for something to be holy in the biblical context, you know, it was something that was consecrated, meaning set apart. It was intentionally said, this thing belongs to God. And mm-hmm. this is, you know, this is for him. And so to have a holy wild birth, it's an intentional, you don't accidentally have a holy wild birth. There's
right. Yes.
Intentional about, I am consecrating this unto the Lord. God, what is your will? What are we, you know, what are we doing together to bring forth this baby? Where should I be? Who should be in attendance? Where, you know, what is your design? Not just for birth, but what is your design for this child that you've put in my womb? What is your design for my experience and transformation into this? Like holy wild birth is all of those things. And it is that intentional dedication and consecration unto him.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Preach. Now, should we popularize that and trademark it and get our feathers ruffled and yes, people use it in the way should. We don't think they should be using it? We
probably should, yeah.
Just kidding. Totally no. kidding.
No.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, I had kind of coined the term anointed birth before, I think even before the podcast. It was a term I had started using after a really hard birth attendance that she had. She had done all of those things. She had dedicated and consecrated unto the Lord. You know, she wanted to have this beautiful VBAC, and then we ended up transferring. And there was, she ended up having a VBAC. She ended up, which is not actually a definition we didn't talk about, vaginal birth after cesarean. Oh, yeah.
It's true.
But she didn't, you know, she did get her VBAC, but it was not in the setting of her home. And it wasn't, she ended up with an epidural, and, you know, and she ended up with a vacuum, and, you know, and it got more medicalized really quickly. And yet I watched, even though she had some real trauma from this birth, and some real, struggles in the recovery, mentally and emotionally around what had occurred. And man, she worked so hard, and she did the thing. Like, she did it. It was not for a lack of the dedication. It was not for lack of doing the internal work and the, physical work. It was, you know, there was, it's just what happened. Yep. And what I felt in that space was something that I also, cause I was wrestling with, like, the disappointment of, you know, was there something maybe I could have done before we got to that point? And, you know, just all of the things. I'm not giving her whole birth story. Obviously it's not mine to tell, but, like, from the midwife standpoint, I was like, okay, how did we get here? And how could we have maybe not, was it possible to not get there? And checking my own self, and did I do too much? Did I do too little? Did I, you know, all of those things. And I began writing, and just what I really had felt was his peace over it. Like, I felt peace that we were supposed to move in. And there was some real reasons at the moments of that baby emerging. I was really happy we were in the hospital. Again, I'm not going to tell her story, but I was glad that we were there. And I felt like, okay, Lord, I'm glad that this is happening, where we can have this, this intervention that is needed, or I would have been all up inside of her and, could have been a different story. And so, it got really hard at that moment of birth. And so I felt his peace and his sovereignty and a gratefulness for being in that place that we didn't want to be in. And so it was a weird grappling. And so I wrote out this definition of just kind of, it was more of a remembrance than a definition, even though I called it anointed birth definition, because it was this cultivation of all of these births that I had gone through myself in my own body, as well as in attendance, and seeing that, like, this anointed birth is something that it doesn't actually matter what it ends up looking like. It doesn't matter what it ends up looking like in the tangible physical. Was an intervention used? Was it not used? Was it, you know, was death, did death occur in it? Did it, you know, like, none of that actually had any chance to meet the definition. The definition was committed solely to the Lord's sovereignty, filled with his presence and the guidance of him, like, that he set it apart and he used it for transformation, that he allowed something to grow there because we had given him permission to use it, to be in it, to guide it. And that he was in and on and around it. And again, it's that, like, intentional relationship to say, it's consecrated. It's set for him. It's sacred.
Anointed birth. Yeah.
It's an anointed birth.
I love that so much. Yeah. That's so good. So as you listen to our, you know, nuanced, hopefully wise conversation about all these terms and what they may mean. And I just wanted to also offer up that I'm going to put in the show notes for you a a little like 11-page workbook I recently created that was kind of born out of this conversation of like, I'm just seeing women like trying to decide what kind of birth they want to have. And this almost this pressure to choose a label and then like fit into it and like make it apply, or like, am I allowed to call my birth this or that? And this workbook is meant mostly just to kind of like actually put all these definitions aside for a minute and just let you explore, what do you mean? Like, what do you sense God is inviting you into for this birth? What do you really want and need for this birth? Do those things, get those things, and then call it what you will. That's pretty secondary to you walking in full alignment with the guidance of the Holy Spirit in your life and your own heart and desires. So it really kind of systematically works you through some steps to get that clarity, and then invites you to either choose a word that's already out there that just, oh, this actually does fit for me and I would like to use that word, or make up a word of your own if you need to. So it's, words matter, and yet we also just keep coming back to it, dogmatically adhering to a label or a title is not the point. Like the point is for you to just be walking in alignment with God and having an anointed birth, or a holy wild birth, essentially, I guess. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes too.
I love that resource. I think it's so valuable. I'm really excited to see the world get to access that.
Yay. Yeah, I hope it helps.
All right. Well, this was rich, and I hope that it was a blessing. And I hope that it brings up some really just good questions and good soul searching, and hopefully some unity. I hope that it brings some unity and allowance to be in disagreement, even if you need to be, but that we would do so in a way that's not harmful to each other.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Yeah. Should I pray us out real quick?
Yes, please.
Yeah. Papa, I thank you for our listeners, because I know they're your daughters who very much desire to just encounter you and know you and be responsive to you as they walk through their pregnancies and their births. And I really think that's the highest goal of probably ever most of our listeners. So I just bless that. And I just ask, as they come to you with just labels and judgments and associations and aside, that they would be able to clearly hear and know your heart for them and for the baby they're carrying and the birth that they're walking into, and just truly to move in freedom and to keep that posture of consecrating every decision that they make along the way to you. They might have truly anointed births. And if there's birth witnesses and birth attendants listening to you, God, I just ask that you would grow them in their ability to be gently curious and to just really hear what's behind the words for the women they serve, what's behind the labels, what's under that, and to be responsive to that, and self-aware, and just truly able to serve in the way that each individual woman needs them to show up for them. And pray these things in the name of our good brother and savior Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Amen. As you were praying, the scripture came to mind that we were, he set us free. It was for freedom that he set us free. And that just felt an appropriate scripture to leave it on.
You were frozen, so I have no idea what you just said.
So as you were praying, I had a scripture come to mind, that it's for freedom that he set us free. And it just felt like such a good word to leave it on after that prayer, that it's for freedom that he set us free.
Yes. Love that.
All right. Well, on that note, go be free, ladies. We love you, and we will talk soon, I guess.
See you next time.
Hey.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Holy Wild Birth. We hope that you were genuinely encouraged, inspired, and challenged by what you heard today. If you're loving what you hear, please make sure that you share it. Leave reviews. That helps other mamas find this content as well. And don't forget to read the show notes, okay? Because that's where you can find our email address if you want to reach out to us and start a conversation. It's also where you'll find free offerings as well as invitations to work with me and or Lauren. We can't wait to get to know you. See you next week.